Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Tech Disruptors by Bloomberg Intelligence. My name is Neeraj Patel. I'm a technology analyst on the Bloomberg Intelligence team, Bloomberg's in-house research group. We are delighted to have the CEO of Braze, Bill Magnuson, today. We look to learn from Bill how Braze is leading marketing automation for enterprise and mid-market customers. With that, let's turn to Bill. And we'd love to hear a little bit about yourself, your experiences, even prior to Braze, and your current role.
Really, thanks, Neeraj. It's great to be here this morning. I am the co-founder and CEO at Braze. Braze is a customer engagement platform, and we'll spend a bunch of time digging into what that means later. But we are headquartered in New York City, where I'm broadcasting to you today from. I co-founded the company with two other people all the way back in mid-2011, and so we're coming up on our 13-year anniversary here in the next few months. I was actually the CTO at founding and took over the CEO role in 2017. So prior to that, I worked in software. I studied computer science in school and did both my undergraduate and master's at MIT. Had some brief stints at both Google and Bridgewater Associates before founding Braze, which was called Appboy all the way back in 2011. We did a rename in 2017, so we're coming up on the 7-year anniversary of being Braze as well, which is pretty exciting. As you mentioned, we just did our Q4 earnings last week. We today are a little bit over 1,600 employees globally. And we mentioned that we just surpassed the $500 million in annual recurring revenue milestone just recently to put a little bit of scale numbers on the business for you. And happy to dig into whatever you think is going to be most interesting today.
Yeah, that's great context. And, you know, given that you recently reported your earnings, maybe we can start with your view of customer spending on software. From our perspective, we've seen a very uneven spending pattern across application software, and we just would like to get your characterization of customer sentiment and their actions on software spend, and if you see any distinctions within the sales and marketing automation category.
Yeah, so I think that one of the biggest distinctions that we see and that we're kind of living through right now that is really important for investors to understand, especially on the marketing technology side, is the difference between discretionary marketing spend, those that kind of follow return on ad spend loops. And, you know, when you've got extra money to be able to drive an acquisition strategy, you know, you can tend to kind of pump up those numbers pretty quickly, but they also come down pretty quickly. By contrast, there's other parts of marketing technology that are more operational by their nature, far less discretionary, really baked into the infrastructure of how a company, you know, communicates with customers, how they maintain relationships with them, et cetera. And also, I think that there's another important part of it, which relates to the ROI. So when we look at, for instance, the ROI function of something like Braze, it is software spend that lives on top of an investment that a brand is making in building a first-party relationship. And so you invest a lot to acquire a customer in the first place. And then there's the activation, retention, and cementing long-term loyalty and, you know, really strengthening that long-term relationship with the customer, which is something that you invest in on top of building that first-party relationship. And so I think that when you look at the overall ROI of something like Braze versus, you know, a lot of the marketing or advertising technology stack that's tied to acquisition, you know, Braze is a really primarily focused on optimizing the value of those relationships that you're building with the customer over time. And so I think that the marginal ROI equation for investment into aspects of the marketing technology stack that focus on the lifecycle and the first party relationships and the building of first party data, because those are building assets and acting on top of them, is fundamentally different from when you're in the ad tech world and you're, you know, effectively renting relationships or renting eyeballs or attention from the likes of, you know, Meta or Google or TikTok or what have you. And you're paying for that every single time. So you're not really building on top of an asset. And so within the marketing and advertising tech space, you know, I think what we've seen is that the spending on Braze has remained very stable within people's marketing technology landscape, even as they may have, like, even in some cases, drastically cut the amount of spending that they have in the advertising technology landscape or that discretionary marketing spend that tends to be more focused on acquisition.
That's interesting. And how is it coming out of the pandemic in terms of the customer selection? We feel that there's an oversupply of vendors, and maybe not in your target customer area, more in the small, medium business segment. But that's our view. what's your take on that? Is there an oversupply or an excess of software suppliers? And how are the customers sifting through that?
Yeah, I would say it's less of a coming out of the pandemic and more of coming out of the SaaS bubble, if you will. So, you know, off by a little bit there. Coming out of, you know, late 2021, early 2022, definitely just the amount of venture dollars that got pushed into so many SaaS providers means that I think in a market that would have had, you know, a correction earlier, you would have seen less of these kind of subscale SaaS providers with a lot of overlapping capabilities and feature sets. And what you're seeing right now is I totally agree that there's a lot of noise in a lot of different categories. There's a lot of overlap because, you know, in a normal kind of venture cycle, you would have seen a lot of the investment consolidate into one or two players that were the most likely to emerge as the leader. Because there was so much money sloshing around in the venture ecosystem, almost every category has, you know, a half dozen or more well-funded players that are within them. And now what you're seeing play out is that they're trying to build into valuations that they achieved during the bubble period. One of the only ways for them to do that is in many cases to expand their platform offering. And that's causing even more overlap because a lot of these companies that, you know, were well-funded through the bubble are now trying to leg into a valuation that they had before, and they're stepping on each other's toes. And these platforms that were already overlapping, that already had a half dozen well-funded players in each category, are now expanding into their adjacencies as well. And it's actually adding even more noise. And so I think that, you know, that general sentiment is correct. I would certainly predict consolidation is going to have to happen as we move into the future. A lot of these companies that raised in that 2020, 2021 time period have got a lot of runway because they raised huge amounts of money. And so they're definitely making a go at it. And, you know, as those runways start to run out, as we start to see more down rounds or more flat rounds and such, I think that you are going to see that consolidation start to happen. We haven't seen it yet just because people were pretty well financed, but I think all the ingredients are there. And that is it's a pretty correct sentiment, at least in the private technology landscape.
Interesting. And Braze is still able to navigate high teens, 20% sales growth expectations for this year. What is the balance between cross-selling to your customer base versus new customer gains?
So over the long term, we tend to see this being about 50-50, but it does ebb and flow over short-term time periods. And so it is interesting that you brought up COVID a little bit ago. You know, I actually, when we went into lockdowns, Braze was in a really interesting position where we work across a lot of different verticals. And so we've got, you know, a lot of verticals that require you to be outside of your house, you know, and out living in the world and interacting. But there's also a lot that you would do at home. You know, when we're talking about e-commerce and retail or a lot of learning applications, in-home fitness, all that kind of stuff. And so as the pandemic showed up, we actually were able to see in real time how people's activity patterns were changing. And the if you kind of took the weighted average of Braze's customer exposure by vertical times, you know, how those verticals were shifting in terms of overall consumption, our early numbers actually showed us that we were going to net out to approximately equal levels of activity as we had before when you net out the kind of winners of the losers of COVID. But what everyone was experiencing was navigating a crisis. And so it was an interesting world for us where, you know, we knew that signing new business was going to be extremely difficult and that defending and renewing the business of those categories that were negatively impacted was going to be difficult, but that there would be great upsell opportunities for those businesses that were expanding and that they were seeing, you know, big spikes in usage and shifts in consumer behavior. And so we spent a few quarters there just navigating that and understanding that we would be focused on upsell for a few quarters. We would probably not see as much new business. We, you know, organized our sales activities around that and our marketing activities around that. But of course, in order to run a successful SaaS company, you need to be able to have both. You know, there it's often referred to as having the hunters and the farmers, and the farmers really being of the install base. Little bit of a broken analogy when the end result of the hunter is actually that you end up with more farmland, but we'll go with it for a bit here. And you know, the way that I kind of think about it is that there are certain seasons where you are going to go and farm the install base and you're going to see more upsell, and that's totally fine. But if you do that for too many quarters in a row, you're eventually going to exhaust that farmland, and you need to make sure that you're also consistently expanding the estate. And so as we got into, you know, early 2021, we started to shift gears from the go-to-market perspective to bias back toward new business so that we would make sure that we weren't relying on, you know, upsell or farming the existing install base for too long. And I think that when you look at this macro environment that we've been in through, you know, 2023 and as we get into 2024, that there's a similar dynamic at play. You know, new business is a bit harder, upsell and cross sell also harder, but easier when you already have the established relationships and when people really understand the ROI that's there. And so we have seen a, you know, we remarked on this for our Q4 results that it was a record quarter for us for upsell. And so we've certainly seen a bit of a shift toward upsell versus new business. But over the long term, we try to keep them in balance, and we will certainly be looking to our go-to-market relative levels of investment as we think that the environment is more conducive to investing in that new business in the coming quarters.
Okay. And just for our listeners, let's establish Braze's position in the marketing tech stack. That would be helpful. And customer base and any brands that the audience would recognize from your view?
Yeah, for sure. So Braze is a customer engagement platform. And to just kind of dive deep, you know, what we literally do is we integrate into our customers' apps, websites, connected fitness products, connected TVs, and we're a companion to the customer journey. So we're there to see how the customer is utilizing those products and services, what they're interested in, which features they utilize the most often or get the most value out of. And then we help orchestrate customer engagement across a variety of messaging channels, as well as delivering messaging and product experience inside those mobile apps or websites in order to help optimize the customer journey and build a strong relationship over time. And so, you know, that translates into doing things like delivering mobile push notifications, delivering surveys inside the application, interstitials and content feeds, which could be things like personalized carousels or a message inbox inside of a mobile application or on a website. We also orchestrate messaging and conversations over channels like SMS and WhatsApp, as well as, you know, being able to bring those things into the web. So web push notifications and in product capabilities like feature flags, which would help a product and engineering team be able to experiment with changes to their application. And so really trying to spread across the many channels that a modern consumer, especially one interacting across a bunch of different channels, going from their phone to their computer, going from a mobile app into a messaging inbox and having a conversation there, being able to kind of rise above those channels and really orchestrate at the level where you're combining together the customer journey and the business's goals. And so that a marketing team can actually then use Braze's software to help orchestrate and support those customer journeys to be able to do things like help people onboard faster and more completely in the activation phase, to help drive them from, you know, being a occasional user to one who's built it into a habit so that it's part of their life, to be able to become a subscriber, be able to become an advocate, or one that helps them spread the brand over time, avoid churn in order to enhance retention, and just generally become a more valuable customer over time. When we look, I've alluded to a few different verticals so far, but just to rattle off a few names that you know, that your listener base would be familiar with, you know, if we start at the top around things where people actively want to establish these healthy habits, but they're pretty difficult, you know, you can look at fitness, working with brands like Equinox, SoulCycle, or Peloton, and learning and education. We work with companies like Quizlet and Course Hero. Across financial services, you can look to places like Intuit and TurboTax, since we're coming up on tax deadlines here, or brands like Venmo to be able to help with peer-to-peer payments and the other financial services that they've provided. Within, you know, retail and e-commerce, a whole bunch of different brands here. Some that you see quite often, places like Bed Bath & Beyond, or previously known as Overstock.com, Wine.com, Mercari. We do a lot in the Shopify ecosystem as well with a lot of smaller individual brands. Across creative software, you can look at something like Canva, and we work with a lot of other kind of productivity and both B2C and B2B software. We've mentioned Miro in our earnings calls earlier this year, which is a really great expansion to more productivity software. Within the kind of gaming space, we work with both DraftKings and FanDuel. particularly notable as we're in March Madness right now. I work with a lot of publishing, looking at newspapers like The Guardian, as well as streaming platforms like Max. Within QSR, working with Yum Brands, which of course own KFC, Pizza Hut, Taco Bell, as well as Wendy's that we mentioned in the most recent earnings call. And then looking at delivery and on-demand, as well as super apps with companies like DoorDash, Delivery Hero and Gorillas, or Rappi, which is a super app down in Latin America. So really running the gamut from a vertical perspective, a lot of different company sizes, and spread out all over the world.
You've named a lot of different verticals and different leaders in those verticals. You know, Wendy's, Intuit, Coursera. Are these customers more or less motivated today to select best of breed solutions in marketing and sales?
Yeah, so I think that the motivation to become more sophisticated and more ambitious in customer engagement continues to grow year over year. And there's a few things that are driving that. You know, first, it goes all the way back to the founding of the business, and that, you know, we believe that there was a huge opportunity to help with businesses that were going to be born and built to be mobile first. And second, that the wide scale adoption of mobile by consumers would transform the enterprise. And of course, if we kind of consider the customer journey in an always on connected world where the consumer is engaging with the brand on their terms, they have a nonlinear journey. They're moving from, you know, channels to platforms, like back and forth. As they choose to, that for you to really provide a companion to that journey with messaging that's relevant to them is a tall order. You know, you're beaming your messaging into a device that is a personal technology device that they bring with in their most important and private moments. That's an incredible opportunity, but it's also a big obligation and responsibility. You're also doing it in a world that's increasingly noisy. And so, you know, both from the perspective of the responsibility that you have to uphold the permission that you've been given to communicate with a customer and to follow them through their journey, you also just need to be able to break through the noise and make sure that you're delivering things that are relevant and personalized to people so that the customer continues to give you that permission to communicate with them and so that you can drive your own goals. And so when we look at, you know, these leading companies, what they're really doing is continuing to respond to both that consumer demand as well as, you know, compete in a marketplace that is increasingly noisy and difficult to break through on. The other side of it, and I alluded to this earlier when thinking about and breaking down marketing technology versus sales technology spend, is that you should really think about this investment in customer engagement software as standing on the shoulders of giants, where the giant is the amount of investment you've already put into building those first party audiences and those first party relationships. So businesses spend a tremendous amount of money acquiring customers, bringing them into their first party ecosystem, establishing that direct to consumer relationship, you know, getting you to download their app, sign up for their loyalty program, become a subscriber, et cetera. It's a huge amount of investment that goes into that. And so if you think about the incremental leverage that you get by investing in a sophisticated way to engage with them through customer engagement versus a more basic approach that might be, you know, trying to duct tape together a number of channel specific silos or using, you know, antiquated batch processing technology or what have you, you're not just looking at that investment in a vacuum. What you're actually doing is squandering the huge investment that you've put into those first party, building those first party relationships by then managing them in a, you know, a poor or limited way. And so the brands that really get this, I think, are not just understanding what it means to move to best of breed technology for something like customer engagement. They also understand the overall investment that they're making in building first party relationships with their customers. And they then therefore realize that the investment that they're making on top to have sophisticated and agile and creative teams that attack this problem, you know, in a way that's data driven and experimental, and that they're arming those teams with great software to be able to, you know, really spread their wings. Like that, from my perspective, it's a no-brainer, and our customers certainly understand that. But I think it's that internalizing that this is a highly leveraged investment on top of first-party relationships is a big step that people need to get to.
Interesting points. Now, let's pivot away from maybe some of the customer experiences and insights to the competitive landscape. We're diving into some points on technology infrastructure. And can you speak to the architecture of Braze versus some other legacy marketing cloud providers like the Salesforce, Adobe's, and SAP?
Yeah, of course, happy to. So Braze was architected from our earliest days back in mid-2011 using stream processing technology. And today, you know, we'd run an event-driven stream processor that ingests all of these data points from customers interacting with products and services in real time, and it processes them each one at a time. So that's in contrast to a batch processing setup, which is how the vast majority of the marketing technology landscape is built, where data flows in, you write it into usually a relational database, and then you have separate processes that run. You know, you're about to send a campaign or you're about to generate an audience, and you kind of go to that relational database, you output your audience, and then you send to it. It's a very different concept from living in the stream of the data, processing every single data point as it flows in, and doing so with a stream processing capability. And Braze has not only been delivering the performance of a stream processor, but actually scaled it tremendously over the course of our lifetime. So we actually just last week released put out a press release that summed up some of our calendar year 2023 numbers. And I'll share a few of those. First of all, we had 7.5 trillion incoming API requests. And so every time a customer is using the products or services of our customers, that's generating data in terms of how they're interacting with them, that's flowing back into Braze in order to then be processed by our stream processor, potentially dispatching other messaging out to them, moving a customer through their Canvas journey or their Canvas flow, contributing to reporting, which can be then allow for our machine learning optimization to be able to go in and improve the automated decision-making that's going on through that journey. And then we utilize that incoming data to execute on 2.6 trillion messaging actions or other sorts of operations by our Canvas environment. And that's messaging that's being delivered across push notifications, email, SMS, surveys inside the product, being able to deliver interstitials and content cards, as well as taking other actions, whether those are helping manage audiences in the paid ad ecosystem or perhaps, doing web service calls through our webhook capability, which allows for a lot of generic power on top of Braze's orchestration engine. So, very large scale, doing this all interactively in real time, spread out across a wide number of channels, being able to interact with customers across a lot of different platforms, and being able to do that with an event-driven stream processor all in the back end.
And this type of new generation technology, is it recognizable by the marketing professionals?
I think it is more and more. This has definitely always been kind of an interesting point for us in the sense that our differentiation, our technology it's an advanced topic area for sure. But I think that what it translates to is a very human concept, which is that if you want to have strong engagement with someone, go back to when you meet someone at a cocktail party, right? If you have 5 or 10 seconds of lag after everything they say, you have no chance of being able to be funny, right? And they're probably going to forget about you pretty quickly. But if you're able to actually live in the moment, be able to, make eye contact, listen to people, understand, respond to the context around them and what they're interested in, you've got a much better chance of being able to cement a strong relationship with them and be able to learn about them as well so that you can build on that learning over time in order to build a great relationship. And so while, the technical details behind this are fairly complex, what it's trying to accomplish is actually a very basic truth about human relationships. And that's one of the things I really love about looking at Braze as a business is that, we're working on this problem space that is just fundamental to capitalism. It's like, how do you build a sustainable business? Answer, have long-term sustainable relationships with your customers. If you accomplish that, you're certainly going to be rewarded as a business. It gives you not only great ROI and dynamics on top of those relationships in order to build a profitable business in the first place. But that foundation of first-party relationships also gives you a tremendous amount of optionality to be able to grow your business model over time because the customer has this strong connection to you as a brand. And we're starting to see that. I mentioned Rappi as a super app that's been able to expand into a whole bunch of different categories. We look at language learning. They actually leverage the relationships they have through their mobile apps to be able to make live tutoring marketplaces. I could really go down the list and you'll see all these different amazing examples where a brand has been able to take a narrow product and service that may have been all they would have built before, but now that they can build that strong direct-to-consumer relationship with that trust, it gives them this incredible foundation to be able to innovate. Venmo is a great example. We all know of Venmo for their peer-to-peer payments, but they also offer debit cards and they have banking services, and you can use Venmo as a payment option when doing both retail checkout as well as when buying, even doing things like food delivery. And so that's a great example where they've been able to leverage those first party relationships and move it into an entire multifaceted financial services play. And they do that in collaboration with Braze, because we help take people that already know and are well connected to and are kind of habitual users of the peer-to-peer payments, and we expose them to the rest of that ecosystem. And we help be a companion along that journey as they do things like apply for the debit card, receive it, activate it, you know, start to use it. These are usually multi-step journeys. You know, that particular example involves offline interaction as well, which obviously makes things even more difficult. And so you can see where, as we help enhance the value of all these relationships, it just drives tremendous amounts of ROI. And you're seeing that innovation happening across all verticals.
And when we consider maybe zooming out on the competitive landscape, how do you view your current competitive field? Do you expect it to change in the near term, or is it fairly constant or consolidate going forward? We touched a little bit on the excessive number of suppliers, but I just wanted your insight on how it's mapped out.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, conceptually, in the way that we experience it as groups, will likely remain pretty consistent. And so by that, I mean that in the enterprise, we primarily compete with the legacy marketing clouds. So companies like Salesforce, Adobe, and Oracle, all of their offerings are characterized pretty consistently. So each one of them acquired an email service provider that was founded right around 2000. So Salesforce acquired ExactTarget, Oracle acquired Responsys, and Adobe acquired Neolane. And then they built a marketing cloud around that. In many cases, what they did, or in almost across the board, in order to become cross-channel, is they made yet more acquisitions. And so these marketing clouds today are actually a number of channel-specific providers that have all been kind of smashed together and generally poorly integrated, and are also all built on, you know, batch processing, relational data technology. They've tried to kind of put real time on top of it as a layer, whether or not it's a real time, you know, journey builder or interaction studio, or, you know, obviously they're all building data products now as well, which purport to be more real time than their prior systems. But the reality is that the foundations of these marketing clouds are still running those antiquated architectures. And so, but they've got a lot of staying power. They've got a, you know, certainly an incumbent advantage, particularly in the enterprise. And so we continue to see them as the competitive set in the enterprise. And then, you know, when we get down into the digital first landscape, or our commercial business, or, you know, selling to startups or smaller businesses, I think that that will continue to be a bit of a cacophony, right? There's always been a lot of noise, a lot of competitors down there. We're absolutely going to see consolidation. We've already seen a few instances of that amongst some of the smaller private competitors there. You know, I think in terms of companies that have emerged from this category and gone public, you only have, you know, Braze and Klaviyo, who IPO'd back in the fall. We're very market segmented. You know, Klaviyo's average customer size is actually only about a fifth of what our minimum customer size is. And so, you know, definitely operating in different parts of the market segment. And then, you know, beyond that, you have a whole bunch of different private, still private competitors. And I think we are certainly going to see additional consolidation amongst that. But if I was going to bet on it, I would say it's probably still going to be noisy even after that consolidation.
Okay, that's great to get your context on the customer and competitive space. Now, we've delayed the topic of AI. So this is, you know, top of mind in multi flavors today across tech and customers. Can you speak to the AI play for your company, first from the revenue side and then from the cost side?
Yeah, absolutely. So Braze has been investing in machine learning and artificial intelligence and other ways to do automated decision making with advanced statistical approaches for almost our entire existence. And so, you know, investment into artificial intelligence is not new for us. Even as, you know, generative AI came into the picture, we were actually way ahead of the curve, having ChatGPT or the OpenAI GPT APIs actually integrated into our product in early 2022. And similarly had DALL-E integrated into our dashboard in November of 2022. We've continued to build on top of that in a variety of different ways. So I mentioned some of these in our most recent earnings call. We actually were able to re-implement the item recommendation backend, which used to use a more neural net driven approach, to actually use transformers now, which of course is the T in ChatGPT. And that's been really exciting to see, because we've been able to swap out the underlying implementation to use a newer, more advanced advanced artificial intelligence approach, and it's leading to better results for customers who use it. We similarly are building on top of, we're continuing to build on top of some of the publicly available LLMs like OpenAI's ChatGPT-4, and we announced the release of Tone Control, which is another example of a capability that we've integrated in the dashboard in order to help marketers enhance their productivity. This one in particular is helping them check for brand voice, to be able to automatically generate new message content that matches a few different strategies, whether you want to appeal to FOMO, you know, reference current events, you want to be kind of clinical and transactional in your commentary. You know, these are different ways to communicate with customers that all resonate in different places. And to be able to generate that content, and then of course you want to be able to optimize it from there. And so we also have capabilities like Personalized Path that we spoke about, which uses another machine learning approach to be able to find clusters of users that that have shared properties and respond in consistent ways so that we can optimize which path of a canvas they go down as we're looking at being able to test different personalized content or different message mediums or maybe different delay strategies to be able to play with urgency and other sorts of concepts like that. And so you're seeing artificial intelligence and machine learning getting integrated throughout the entire workflow of the marketer being able to produce content, as well as helping optimize decisions that are being made throughout the customer journey as we're deciding where and when to interact. You know, how do we find more of those moments that matter for the customer when we're in that moment? How do we make sure we're saying the most relevant thing to them in order to drive additional value? And so that's been a longstanding investment area. We continue to, you know, roll out new innovations across our stack that continue to both make marketers' lives easier as well as optimize results for them. From a revenue standpoint, you know, there's a few things here. One is that by and large, anything that's helping with marketer productivity, we're bundling that right into the offering. Because we know that, you know, the faster that marketers can adopt new use cases, the higher ROI they're going to get out of Braze, the more use cases they're going to bring to us, and that leads to additional customer expansion, whether it's volumes or new channels or new products or what have you. And so we're happy to do that. From a cost function standpoint, you know, if you just take some of the numbers, we have about 2,000 customers. And you know, if you add up the API calls and the message actions that I was talking about earlier, it's over 10 trillion. And so from an order of magnitude standpoint, you know, almost anything that we build into the dashboard experience for marketers is really just a rounding error in terms of costs. There are other aspects of the costs, like the item recommendation engine that I mentioned before that sits on top of transformers and custom built models. Those are certainly more expensive, and we monetize those independently. And so that is a premium subscription offering. And so I think what you're going to see is, you know, both things happen. Some of these AI and machine learning innovations are going to be monetized independently, either because of the cost function or because they're producing incremental value in that way. But a lot of the things that are more oriented toward making people more productive users of Braze, you know, we anticipate continuing to integrate those directly into the product. And so, you know, we don't really see Gen AI or, you know, more traditional AI and machine learning approaches fundamentally changing our gross margin profile in that way due to the expense, because kind of anything that has a meaningful marginal expense, we will be able to monetize independently. And then, you know, there are other aspects of it that monetize directly, but, you know, there's a bunch more that will also just make our deal cycles faster, help our marketers be more productive, help drive, you know, adoption of additional use cases, and that everyone wins in those cases.
And do you see the AI impact on some measurements like attach rates across your cross-selling of your portfolio, or is that yet to come?
We absolutely do. And for that, I'm not, you know, zeroing in on Gen AI, which is obviously a more recent phenomenon, but really looking at the adoption of the broader cross-section of Sage AI within the product, where we've been incorporating automated decision-making and machine learning capabilities for years. And what we see is that when customers use our more sophisticated capabilities within our Canvas environment, which we haven't spoken about a lot, but just quickly is a kind of visual programming environment where marketers are able to go in and design the companionship to the customer journey to be able to have conditionals and different kinds of experiment logic and things like that. That they can effectively orchestrate their cross-channel messaging journeys for customers. within that, you can imagine all these different decision points around, you know, when am I going to talk to someone? What channel am I going to send it to? Who am I talking to? What am I going to say? Which of my many, you know, business priorities am I going to try to optimize for when I have this opportunity to communicate? And those are all places where we've been incorporating in machine learning capability to be able to make those decisions faster and more productively for our, on behalf of our customers. And we absolutely see higher attach rates, higher retention, and higher expansion rates for customers that utilize those more advanced features.
And do you see any type of data privacy concerns? I know you're working in leveraging your customers' data to come up with solutions for them to engage more business. EU GDPR is always in the background, and some of the state regulatory data privacy seems to be rolling out in the US. But was curious what your view is on that.
Yeah, I think this is an area where Braze has always been well ahead of the curve because we've tried to keep ourselves centered on these like very human understandings of like privacy and around like listening. And so when you think about the first party data universe where someone is interacting with your product and service directly, what we try to encourage our customers to do is to think about how they can be a good listener and a companion to that customer journey, not be a creepy detective, right? So when you look at things like the IDFA and the cookie changes and what a lot of GDPR did, the strategies that those cut off at the knees were generally characterized by, all right, someone has just shown up to my app or my website. Let me figure out who they are. And then based on who they are, I'm going to go look them up in these other third-party databases and try to find out things about them. We've always discouraged our customers from doing that. What we say to do instead is, hey, someone showed up in your application. It doesn't matter who they are. Let's just be a good listener. Let's just pay attention. They're going to reveal to you very quickly in the first, you know, even in the first time that they're navigating your website or using your mobile application, what kind of customer persona they are, what they're interested in, you know, how they're trying to get value out of your product or service. And so if we just focus on being a good listener, we're going to be a much better companion. And in fact, a lot of times when we try to guess at their identity and then get this other information, it's wrong. You know, there's been all these conversations around like, you know, how do you know when something's being creepy? It's like, well, a pretty simple way is when you accidentally mistake someone for someone else in their household, right? Or you like grab this like bad guess about their demographics and you, you know, have a conjecture from their demographics, which is way off base. Like that's a pretty quick way to not just be creepy, but to just be wrong, to be irrelevant, right? And to really sacrifice the great opportunity that you had to communicate something relevant and useful. By contrast, if you just be a good listener, people want you to be a good listener, right? Like if they're revealing to you what they care about in your product service while they're using it, they want you to pay attention to that. And so that's not something where you need to worry about being creepy. And then of course, you also don't need to worry about problems like GDPR and a lot of the other governance and regulation around this because you're operating in the first party data ecosystem and you're being respectful. And I think that if you continue to do those two things, you know, you're going to be on the right side of history when it comes to data privacy. And frankly, you're going to drive better results because when a marketer comes into, you know, a Braze dashboard that hasn't been polluted by a bunch of third-party data sets that may or may not be correct, and they know that everything that they see there, they can use to make orchestration and personalization decisions and classification decisions, you know, that frees them to actually be more creative, to be more experimental, to be more innovative. They never have to second guess themselves about whether or not the data that they're using is correct or is recent or is, or is like creepy or not to use. They can really be free to experiment. And I think that's the world that more and more marketing teams should aspire to get into. And they should just kind of speed up past this transition period where there's all this hand wringing about the third-party data sets. Like, let's just assume the cookie is dead and move on.
Interesting. Bill, this has been a great conversation today. We really appreciate all the depth and breadth that you covered here on the market trends, competitive dynamics. If there's a final point you would like to leave our listeners in terms of emerging tech to look out for, what would that be?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, when we look at the direction that Braze is going in the future, we're really excited about how all these generational trends are adding together. You know, there's a huge amount of investment across the entire economy in building up first-party audiences and first-party data. And I think that more and more brands are starting to understand that as an asset in and of itself. And then they're starting to understand how their business models can evolve as a result of that. You know, you're also seeing other generational trends like consumer expectations are rising every year. A lot of these markets, because of how widely deployed smartphones are as a technology, are increasingly global. They do that on the back of, you know, better digital infrastructure around things like payments and distribution platforms. And so I think we're going to continue to see the world changing in really meaningful ways as more and more of our lives and more of the products and services that we consume and the interactions and the experiences that we have in our lives incorporate in them a digital device, digitally accessible brands and services. And as we do that, we build a relationship with those brands. And I think that's actually describing the way that the economy overall is going. And so I, as an investor, when you look at the entire products and services ecosystem, I think it's really helpful to obviously look at how technology is changing over time, but to also keep yourself rooted in things that don't change. And so, you know, what are the fundamentals of capitalism? What makes a good business? What makes a good relationship? You know, these are things that are not going to change even as the technology does. The technology changing creates new opportunities. And, you know, at the convergence of those two points is where you're going to find businesses that you can bet on, you know, for the long term to be able to take advantage of disruption, but be able to then scale because they're tied to these fundamentals. And I think, you know, Braze is an example of one of those companies. But when you really dig through the ecosystem, you'll certainly find more of them.
Bill, that's great insight and perspective. We really appreciate you joining us today on Bloomberg's Tech Disruptors.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been great.